702 Weekend Breakfast
with Refilwe Mpakanyane.
Live, online,
smartphones,
DSTV channel 856
and 92.7 and 106 FM.
It's 7 minutes past eight. Thank you so much to Sfiso Zulu for that news update. We'll hear more from Sfiso at 9 o'clock. At the bottom of the hour, as we're doing of late, we'll be hearing only from Michael Pedro as he brings us a full news update. Now, usually at this time of the morning, usually sees us speaking to author and speaker on parenting, Nikki Bush. But this week, we'll be changing tack. Now, when I was talking to Nikki last week about using this pandemic to build children's EQ, emotional intelligence, she did make some references to anxiety around COVID-19 and did say something to the effect that the virus statistically was not worse than the influenza virus. And of course, that's obviously not correct. I did refer her to the earlier conversation that I'd had with Dr. Fundi Lenyati on the widely reported and increased infection rate that and fatality rates that our country is dealing with. We get them on a daily, hourly basis. And even our conversation also involved a look at the sometimes long-term physical effects that the virus can have. And that was the long haulers phenomenon that we unpacked with the doctor. So that all being said, we thought it would be very, very important to just tamp down on that correction and to talk further about COVID-19, right? Within the parenting and family context, we are in the upswing of this curve, especially here in Gauteng, but as a country in general. And of course, as we move down, as we experience the colder winter months, and as we move down those lockdown levels and movement restrictions are loosened and lessened, it's so incumbent upon us to have the right information, the correct information about how our behavior and our actions can protect us from contracting COVID-19 and or spread it to others. So it's about empowering ourselves with the right knowledge in order to keep ourselves safe, to keep other people safe, to keep our families safe. And on that note, I'm very, very happy to welcome to Weekend Breakfast Dr. Karen van der Merwe, who's part of the Gauteng General Practitioners Collaboration Group, a group established by GPs to share their experiences in order to, I guess, in many ways, bolster each other's morale and give each other ideas on the treatment of patients. But now this group has become such an amazing resource for members of the public in general during this very, very trying time. Who better to speak to than GPs who are on the ground and interacting with patients during this time? And I can definitely say I have been the recipient of many links on Facebook from my sister. Dr. Karen van der Merwe, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Weekend Breakfast. Good morning.
Good morning, Refilwe. Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure, Dr. van der Merwe. So, you know, as part of the Gauteng General Practitioners Collaboration, I'd just like you to paint a picture of how you guys are, what it is that you do on that platform and how you're talking about specifically COVID-19 at this time.
Well, we started off supporting each other as GPs on a WhatsApp forum, and then we soon realized that our patients were so anxious and sure. There was so much misinformation about COVID on social media, and so we decided we needed to make a trustworthy source of information that was evidence-based for our patients, mm-hmm. and that's how we started our Voices at Care campaign, which is on our Facebook page.
Yeah, really, really love to see it, and it's incredibly helpful, and also stripped down of a lot of jargon and spoken, you know, written rather, very, very plainly in ways that anybody can understand and be able to interact with. But today we're talking about COVID-19, children and the family, and specifically what I'm looking at right now is an article written by Dr. Daniel Israel, and this one was essentially called COVID-19, what's the latest evidence as to whether children can contract and transmit the SARS-CoV-2 virus? And it's an important discussion to have against the backdrop of schools going back or schools opening back up and the contestation around how safe it is, whether it's from a union perspective where they are decrying a lack or not enough PPE or protection for for learners as well as teachers, or even, for instance, Musi Maimane calling on a school, complete school stay away. But, you know, in this context, what the picture that we're painting and discussing is for those parents that need to send their children to school and that are entertaining the idea or have already done so, all of this needs to take place in an environment of having the right knowledge, right, and making empowered decisions. Mm. So, yeah. Let's talk about children specifically and COVID-19. What percentage or chunk of the COVID-19 positive population do children make up?
Thanks for that question. So worldwide, less than 4% of total COVID infections have been found in children less than 19.
Mm.
So it's a very, very small amount. And fortunately, even those who do contract COVID-19 tend to have a very, very mild disease,
mm-hmm.
With a death rate of about 0.01%, so an incredibly low death rate.
Mm.
Most children, if they do catch COVID, would liken it to a common cold.
Yeah.
Some of them may even be asymptomatic. So we're very fortunate in a sense that COVID is not a disease that affects children severely.
Yeah. And of course, you know, then the next question is, what is it about children's biology that makes them so seemingly so much less susceptible to COVID? And when they are, it is less the symptoms and its manifestations are less drastic than in adults.
Yeah, the simple answer is that we don't know, but we do have some theories.
Okay.
In general, if you look at diseases, some are more prevalent in children and some are more prevalent in adults. And we think it's got to do with the emerging immune system of a child. And that as it the immature immune system is actually quite well poised to fight off a range of infections that might actually infect adults that don't infect children. And then as the immune system matures, there are other diseases which adults are better at fighting than children.
Mm.
That's one of the theories. Another theory is that children get colds more often, they get viruses more often, and some of these are corona-like viruses. COVID's not the only coronavirus out there.
Sure.
So it's possible children have already developed a bit more of an immunity than adults. We may have lost that over time.
Yeah. And of course, you know, in our own context where there is this contestation around whether or not it's the right time for children specifically, or especially in government schools, to go back to school, the worry, I guess, fundamentally is even in the case where it's understood that children are less susceptible or better able to fight the coronavirus, the COVID-19 disease, the worry then is, what happens if I am in a family, a multi-generational family, where it's my elderly parents, myself as the adult, and then my children in the house? Should we worry about the likelihood, or what is the likelihood of my child going to school, possibly picking it up, and then transmitting it to my elderly parents?
Yeah, I know that's a tough one.
Mm.
Fortunately, children have also not been found to spread coronavirus or COVID. It seems to be something adults spread to children and not in the other direction.
Mm.
Having said that, each family would have to make their own risk assessment and follow sensible things like if you've got an elderly person in your home. I think the whole family needs to treat that elderly person with great respect, keep social isolation even within the home, because mm-hmm. others are also going out to work
sure.
and to shop. And we all need to really just keep our fragile and elderly and those with comorbidities a little bit separate from us during this time.
Mm-hmm. And it really isn't easy, right? So we're living in a society where, in terms of resources and the money that you have and your living situation, you might be living in a smaller space. You might not be able to keep perhaps at physical distance. So what does that call for if you are living in a smaller space or a confined space, but still with that multi-generational aspect? Are we then going to keep those face masks on in the house? How do we treat granny in the house in that instance?
You know, I think if granny's very high risk, there's no reason why you shouldn't keep face masks on in the house and wash hands lots and not share eating utensils. You know, very simple, basic sanitation should be absolutely adequate. And as I say, it's the little children are not going to be the ones giving granny the infection. It's actually those going out to shop and work who are going to be at a much higher risk of transmitting to the elderly.
And, you know, I guess in many ways, the conversation about going back to school and worrying about COVID-19 and children is also about the worry around teachers as well. You know, I guess when I framed the conversation, I talked about COVID-19 children and the family. But of course, it's COVID-19 children, the family, and the entire school family as well. In that context, how should parents, I mean, how should teachers be behaving and thinking about going back to class if they're in an environment where they have the requisite PPE and protection?
No, I think if they've got the right protection, they are very, very safe. If they really are keeping that distance from the children, and obviously, again, I can say the children are not the ones who are going to be giving COVID to the teachers. If anything, the teachers will be giving it to the children. And often a place like a staff room in a very closed environment for ventilation is actually going to be a much, much higher risk for teachers to catch COVID. So it's like any work environment. You need to wear your mask, keep your isolation in place, wash hands frequently, and the risk should not be more increased than in another workplace environment. And like any other workplace, the risks have to be assessed. There may be some teachers who are immunocompromised. They may have diabetes that's not well controlled, or hypertension that's poorly controlled, heart disease. And these things need to be taken into account. And some of those teachers may be better off working from home.
You know, I'm curious about just maintaining at home during this time for those families that are struggling under the burden of anxiety during this time, and you know, parents wondering whether or not they've made the right decision to either send their kids to school and they're worrying about COVID-19. You've allayed a lot of fears, I imagine, during the course of our conversation right now when it comes to children and their ability to transmit COVID-19 at this point. But there's also the other aspect of deciding to keep your child at home because you just don't think it is the good choice for your family, and a child being able to socialize and see other kids. Yes, socializing is very different at this point. There's no robust and interactive play like there used to be, but it makes a difference. How should we be, you know, mitigating the effects of a child either feeling lonely, either feeling isolated, or just being frustrated by this phenomenon? Because it is a real worry. As much as we can have this sort of top line conversation about the fact that scientists are working on a vaccine, hopefully there'll be something in a year's time or, you know, in the foreseeable future. But whilst we're in it, it feels incredibly difficult, and it feels as though, you know, we're struggling to stay afloat sometimes.
Yeah, but Phil, you know, everybody's under stress.
Sure.
And the children are just as much under stress as the adults. And one thing I can say that's so important is to be honest with your children, because children pick up that there's something on the go. They know there's a COVID-19 out there. They know it's very serious. And in their imaginations, they'll actually make it feel a lot worse than it really is. So if you can talk to them at their level as to exactly what's going on, give them the facts in a way that they can understand, already that's going to decrease their anxiety. Now, the second part of your question was children at home and being frustrated and lacking social interaction. You know, children are very different. Some children are thriving at home. They absolutely love being in the home environment.
Sure.
Having just their family around them is perfect. They're very suited to online learning. And, you know, if you're in a fortunate position and your school is well set up for that, you can keep them home. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But there are others who really do need that social interaction. Either they've got to go to school for that, or possibly some very, what I call a safe play date, is going for a walk in the park with your friend a meter apart wearing a mask.
Sure.
so that you are still in the open, you're not actually very close to each other, sort of like it would have been on the playground at school.
Mm-hmm.
Or organizing things like Zoom calls or some kind of video calls with the children's friends, trying to find other online activities that they can be involved with. I know my daughter's dancing class carries on online.
Yes.
She's got a cooking class she does online. Look, I'm in a fortunate position.
Yeah.
But try to be creative and find things so that children can still connect with their peers.
Yeah. And let me just take this time to reintroduce you. My guest on the line is Dr. Karen van der Merwe. She's part of the Gauteng General Practitioners Collaboration. You can find them on Facebook. They do have a group there, and they write various articles, you know, answering and speaking to very, very helpful, or speaking to various points of concern or anxiety that we might have as the general population, but also helping each other as general practitioners solve or address the problems that they encounter or the realities that they encounter in their everyday practices. Should you have any questions for Dr. van der Merwe, please send through an SMS to 31702 or 011-883-0702. Of course, bearing in mind that she is not your treating doctor. She's not your, unless you've had a one-on-one consultation with her, this is just advice at this point. So please do send through those questions and or comments should you have any. So, Dr. van der Merwe, this is something that I think has been a point of conversation for a lot of people who are in the fortunate position of having the option to send their child to school. And they've made the decision that, you know, they can deal with the risks, whatever those risks might be, or however small, they've decided to send their child to school. Is it enough to argue or to decide that your child's mental and emotional well-being is enough of a compelling reason to send them to school? We've just touched on the fact that some kids do need that outside interaction to be able to better thrive, because we are playing a balancing game here, right? The idea of added trips outside into the outside world and added forays into the outside world, meaning more exposure, possible exposure, against the idea that actually my child is just not coping with being stuck at home, with having me as her teacher and her mother and her gym teacher and her everything. She does need to see other people. And I'm saying this from personal experience, yeah. Because it was getting untenable, you know.
I can hear that. Mm. I absolutely endorse children going to school for mental health reasons and for the mental health of the family. Mm. Families are taking huge strain, as you say, being the teacher and the emotional support and the PE teacher and all the extramurals. Absolutely, children should, that is a compelling reason for children to go to school. The anxiety level in young people at the moment is extremely high, and they also need each other to be able to process what's going on in the world. And school's probably one of the safest places they can go. It's safer than taking them to Pick and Pay, I think. You know, at school, it's very controlled. They're screening the children. They're keeping them a safe distance apart. They're making sure they wear their masks. They're sanitizing their hands. So it's a very controlled environment. Mm. So I think of all the places you could send your child, it's a very safe place.
Yeah.
And crucial for mental health if your child is one that is really suffering.
Yeah. For someone who's listening right now and hearing us talking about, you know, we're having a bit more of a blue skies discussion. But if you're in a position where your child has not been able to go back to school yet, the school is not taking that grade, isn't taking any learners, in fact, because they're not prepared, and you don't have the option of, you don't have the option or a reliable option of learning online or learning remotely, is it a good time right now to start preparing or bracing your child for either having to make up part of the syllabus or the whole syllabus, or perhaps even repeating? It's a grim conversation to have, but it is already July, and time and traction have been lost in some cases. And as I mentioned when we started having this conversation, calls for a go slow when it comes to going to school, or calls by unions to say, guys, we're not prepared for this, we need better support for our teachers. Is it a good idea to have that conversation with your child, that you may be repeating a grade again next year, or we just don't know what will happen regarding the syllabus? I mean, it's pretty grim, and you don't want to load on, the worries on for your child. But, you know, as a parent, you want to start thinking about the fact that you have a child that either needs to be very well prepared for any eventuality, or you might have the kind of child that, you know, just rolls with the punches.
Exactly. You know, I don't really feel terribly equipped to answer that question.
Sure.
I think it is going to really impact the children who don't have access to homeschooling. Mm. And that's actually also one of the reasons that we are motivating for children to go back to school, because these children have got the raw end of the stick. They're not going to get that sick from COVID, and yet they've been denied schooling. And as you say, they've lost out on a very, very big chunk of their schooling. I don't know what you would say to the child. One thing that springs to mind is that we're all going to be in the same boat. So
sure.
I don't know whether a whole grade can repeat a year. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I do hope that the schools are going to be creative in their response to help catch children up. And also individualistic, because there's some children who will be okay and will manage to bounce back, and there'll be others who will need a lot of extra help. Mm. And I just hope the Department of Education is thinking about this and putting programs into place. As a parent, if you do have the resources, if you can get a tutor or someone who's a bit older who's gone to college or university or has matriculated, get them in to help your child, you know, be proactive. Mm. To just give them the extra help that they can get.
Yeah.
It's not always possible, but I would say do what you can.
And before I let you go, you know, we know that we've touched on the fact that there is there are lower cases of infection amongst children. For those children that have tested positive for COVID-19, we've seen the phenomenon of Kawasaki disease, which is, can you explain what Kawasaki disease is and how globally the phenomenon of that showing up in children has been tracked? And should we be worried about that, or are the chances of this low?
Kawasaki disease has been described in children. It's really a very high inflammation response to COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So it presents with things like fever and rash and tummy upsets, diarrhea, abdominal pain, headache.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing to tell you is it's extremely rare.
Yes.
So this is not something you need to worry about. It's extremely unlikely that a child with COVID is going to get it. The other good news is that children haven't tended to die from this. Some of them have been quite sick and needed to be hospitalized, but the mortality rate has been extremely low. So it's something we can manage and they will get through.
Mm-hmm. Is there any data on children who, few children that have contracted COVID-19 and recovered, is there any data on any sort of lingering effects in any way that, you know, that they can look at post-recovery and say, you know, this child is not quite recovered to the sort of same level at which they were before physically? And I'm saying this in mind this long-haulers phenomenon, where adults have been presenting symptoms long after they've tested negative. And of course, those adults have been in the minority, and it's a phenomenon that has been recently reported on and talked about. Have we seen anything like that in children?
You know, again, I think it's probably possible, mm-hmm. but extremely rare. I wouldn't say it's impossible. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, nothing's impossible in medicine, but
sure.
It's not something I've seen a lot of case studies about.
Mm.
I don't think it's something that is common.
Yeah. All right. Fantastic. Thank you so much, Dr. Karen van Merwe, for your time today. I've really appreciated your insights as well. And I hope our listeners have just gleaned that much more knowledge in order to be able to make informed decisions when it comes to how they're going to keep themselves and keep their families safe as we carry on in this journey with this pandemic. And yeah, 6 months in, it's definitely been quite a ride. And of course, I understand that the medical sector is learning more and more about it as we go along. So I hope to have this conversation where we get updated with more new developments and insights specifically with regards to kids.
Thanks, Rafilwe. Yeah, anytime.
All right, fantastic. Thank you for your time. That's Dr. Karen van der Merwe, part of the Gauteng General Practitioners Collaboration.